True to his word and much to the commander's annoyance, Valak didn't leave the commander's side. Ari and Jenko enjoyed a change in routine, but I made them work hard. Whenever I wasn't tasting the commander's meals, I had Ari drill me with knife defense, and Jenko give me more lessons on picking locks. The general's departure was scheduled for the next day, which meant it was time to do some of my own reconnaissance. It was early evening, and I knew Valak would still be with the commander until late. I told Ari and Jenko that I was going to bed early, and bade them goodnight at the threshold to Valak's suite. After waiting an hour, I slipped back into the hallway. The corridors of the castle were not as deserted as I had hoped, but Valak's office was located off the main throughway. I approached his door, scanning the hallway for activity. Seeing no one, I inserted my picks into the first of the three keyholes, but my nerves made popping the lock impossible. I took a couple of deep breaths and tried again. I had two locks sprung when I heard voices approaching. Standing, I pulled the picks out of the keyhole and knocked on the door just as two men came into view.
"He's with the commander," said the guard on the left.
"Thanks," I replied, and started to walk in the opposite direction with my heart beating like a hummingbird's wings. I glanced behind me until they were gone, then raced back to Valak's office. The third lock proved to be the most difficult. I was covered with sweat by the time I popped it. I hurried into the room, locking the door behind me. My first task was to open the small wooden cabinet that held my antidote. Perhaps Valak had locked the recipe in there. I lit a dim lantern to peer inside. Glass bottles of various shapes and sizes gleamed in the light. Most of the bottles were marked poison. A growing sense of urgency consumed me as I searched. All I uncovered was a large bottle containing the antidote. I poured only a few doses into the flask I had hidden in my pocket, knowing that Valak would notice if I took too much. After relocking the cabinet, I began a systematic search of Valak's files, starting with the desk drawers. Even though his office was strewn with books and maps, his personal dossiers were well organized. I found files on Marge and the commander, and was tempted to read them, but I stayed focused on finding any folder bearing my name or a reference to Butterfly's Dust. Valak had written many interesting comments about my tasting abilities in my personnel file, but there was no mention of the poison or the antidote. When I finished with the desk, I moved to the conference table. Books on poisons were interspersed with files and other espionage documents. I sorted through the piles. My time was running out. I had to be back in Valak's suite before he escorted the commander to his apartment. I suppressed my disappointment as I finished with the table. There was still half of his office left to search. I was halfway across the quiet room when I heard the distinct sound of a key being inserted into the lock. One click, then the key was withdrawn. I snuffed out the lantern as the second lock clicked open. Diving behind the conference table, I hoped the boxes piled underneath would hide me from view. "Please," I prayed to the forces of fate, "let it be Marge and not Valak." A third click made my heart squeeze. The door opened and closed. A light tread of footsteps crossed the room. Someone sat at the desk. I didn't risk peeking, but I knew it was Valak. Had the commander retired early? I reviewed my meager options. Be discovered or wait Valak out. I eased into a more comfortable position. A few minutes later, someone knocked on the door.
"Come," said Valak.
"Your, package has arrived, sir," said a male voice.
"Bring him in."
Valak scraped his chair on the stone floor. I heard the rustle of chains and a shuffling step.
"You're dismissed," Valak said.
The door clicked shut. A familiar rancid smell of the dungeon reached my nose.
"Well, Tentel, are you aware that you're next in line for the noose?" Valak asked.
My heart went out to the doomed prisoner. I knew exactly how he felt.
"Yes, sir," a voice whispered.
Pages crackled.
"You're here because you killed your 3-year-old son with a plow, claiming it was an accident. Is that correct?" Valak asked.
"Yes, sir. My wife had just died. I was unable to afford a nanny. I didn't know he had climbed under."
The man's voice was pinched with pain.
"Tentel, there are no excuses, Nixia."
"Yes, sir. I know, sir." I want to die, sir. The guilt is too hard to bear.
Then dying wouldn't be adequate punishment, would it? Valak didn't wait for a response. Living would be a harsher sentence. In fact, I know of a profitable farmstead in MD4 that has tragically lost both the farmer and his wife, leaving behind 3 sons under the age of 6. Tentel will hang tomorrow, or so everyone shall believe, but you will be escorted to MD4 to take over the operation of a corn plantation and the job of raising those 3 boys. I suggest your first order of business should be to hire a nanny. Understand?
But
the code of behavior has been excellent at ridding Ixia of undesirables, but it is somewhat lacking in basic human compassion. Despite my arguments, the commander fails to grasp this point, so I occasionally take matters into my own hands. Keep your mouth shut, and you will live. One of my associates will check on you from time to time. I huddled behind the boxes, frozen in disbelief. Hearing Valak use the word compassion was as incomprehensible to me as the thought of Marge apologizing for her rude behavior. There was another knock on the door. "Come," Valak said. "Perfect timing as always, Wing. Did you bring the documents?" I heard a rustle of papers. "Your new identity," Valak said. "I believe our business is concluded. Wing will escort you to MD4. Chains clanked to the floor. "You're dismissed."
"Yes, sir," Tentel said. His voice cracked. He was probably overwhelmed.
I knew how I would feel if Valak offered me a free life. After the men left, a painful quiet descended. I feared the sound of my breath would give me away. Valak's chair scraped. 2 faint thumps were followed by a loud yawn. "So, Yelena, did you find our conversation interesting?" I held still, hoping he was guessing, but his next statement confirmed my dismay. "I know you're behind the table." I stood. There was no anger in his voice. He lounged in his chair with his feet resting on the desktop. "How did you..." I began. "You favor lavender-scented soap, and I wouldn't be alive today if I couldn't determine when someone had picked my locks. Assassins love to ambush, leaving dead bodies behind mysteriously locked doors. Fun stuff." Valak yawned again. "You're not angry?" "No, relieved, actually. I wondered when you would search my office for the recipe to the antidote." Sudden fury welled in my throat. "Relieved? That I might try to escape? That I rifled through your papers? You're that confident that I won't succeed?" Valak cocked his head to one side, considering. "I'm relieved that you're following the standard steps of escaping, and not inventing a unique plan. If I know what you're doing, then I can anticipate your next move. If not, I might miss something. Learning how to pick locks naturally leads to this." Valak gestured around the room. "But, since the formula has not been written down, and only I know it, I'm confident you won't find it." I balled my hands into tight fists to keep them from wrapping around Mr. I Know Everything's superior neck. "Okay, so there's no chance for escape. How about this? You gave Tentel a new life, why not me?" "How do you know I haven't already?" Valak put his feet on the floor and leaned forward. "Why do you think you were in the dungeon for almost a year? Was it only luck that you happened to be the next in line when Oskov died? Perhaps I was merely acting at our first meeting when I seemed so surprised that you were a woman." It was too much to bear. "What do you want, Valak?" I demanded. "Do you want me to give up trying? Be content with this poisoned life? Do you really want to know?" Valak's voice intensified. He stood and walked over to me. "Yes. I want you. Not as an unwilling servant, but as a loyal staff member. You're intelligent, quick-thinking, and becoming a decent fighter. I want you to be as dedicated as I am at keeping the commander safe. Yes, it's a dangerous job, but on the other hand, one miscalculated somersault on the tightrope could break your neck. That's what I want. Will you be able to give it to me?" Valak's eyes seared deep into mine, searching for an answer. "Besides, where would you go? You belong here." I was tempted to concede, but I knew that if I wasn't poisoned or murdered by Brazel,
The wild magic in my blood would eventually explode, taking me with it. The only physical mark I would leave on this world would be a ripple in the power source. Without the antidote, I was lost anyway. I don't know, I said. There's too much that you haven't told me. I nodded, unable to speak. Telling him about my magical abilities, I thought, would only get me killed faster. Trusting is hard. Knowing who to trust, even harder, Valak said. And my track record has been rather horrendous, a weakness of mine. No, a strength. Look at Ari and Jenko. They appointed themselves your protectors long before I assigned them, all because you stood up for them to the commander, when their own captain wouldn't. Think about what you have right now before you give me an answer. You have gained the commander's and Marin's respect, and Ari and Jenko's loyalty. What have I earned from you, Valak? Loyalty? Respect? Trust? You have my attention. But give me what I want, and you can have everything. The next morning, the generals prepared to leave. It took 4 hours for 8 retinues to assemble. 4 hours of noise and confusion. When everyone had finally passed through the outer gates, it seemed that the castle breathed a sigh of relief. In the wake of this sudden release of tension, servants and guards milled about. They grouped together in small clumps, taking a break before cleaning the 8 guest suites. It was during this lull in activity that the commander informed the rest of the castle staff that the Sishan delegation was scheduled to arrive the next day. His words struck like lightning. A flash of stunned silence was followed by a frenzy of activity as servants dashed off to make the proper preparations. Although happy to see the backs of Mogkin and Brazel, I wandered listlessly about the castle. I hadn't given Valak his answer. To live, I had to go south, but without the antidote, I wouldn't survive. Dread filled my heart as the reality of my inevitable fate filled my mind. The next day, my presence was required at the special greeting ceremony for the arriving southern delegation. Apprehension about seeing the Sishans unsettled my stomach. I felt as if someone were saying, "Yelena, take a good look at what you can't have." Since the throne room had been converted into an office, the only place in the castle suitable for state affairs was the commander's war room. Once again, Valak stood stiffly in his dress uniform on the commander's right side, while I waited behind them. My apprehension turned to awe as I felt the waves of nervous energy pulsing from the high-ranking officials and advisors selected to be a part of the ceremony. When the delegation was announced and invited to enter, I moved to get a better view. The Sishans floated into the room, their long, brightly colored exotic robes draped to the floor, covering their feet. Wearing animal masks trimmed with bright plumes of feathers and fur, they stopped before the commander and fanned out into a V-shape. Their leader, wearing a hawk's face, spoke in formal tones.
"We bring you greetings and salutations from your southern neighbors. We hope this meeting will bring our two lands closer together. To show our commitment to this endeavor, we have come prepared to reveal ourselves to you."
The speaker and the four companions removed their masks in one rehearsed movement. I blinked several times in astonishment, hoping that during the seconds of darkness everything would be set right. Unfortunately, my world had just mutated from bad to wretched. Valak glanced at me with a resigned look as if he too couldn't believe this new turn of events. The Sishan leader was Iris. A master-level magician stood a mere 3 feet before Commander Ambrose. Chapter 26.
Ixia welcomes you to our land and hopes to make a fresh start, the commander announced to the southern delegation.
As I waited behind the commander, I wondered what would happen to the Sishans once Valak informed the commander that Iris was a magician. Contemplating the mischief she might create before leaving the castle, I tried to envision a best-case scenario. I failed, realizing this was probably only the beginning of the end. Valak watched thoughtfully as the Southerners and the commander exchanged more formal statements. I guessed from Valak's demeanor that Iris had not used her magic. After the official greeting ceremony concluded, the delegation was guided to their quarters to rest from their journey and to await the evening's feast. Protocol decreed that pleasantries and entertainment preceded hardcore negotiations. Everyone, except the commander and Valak, filed out of the war room. I started to leave, but Valak grabbed my arm.
"Okay, Valak, let's hear it. Some dire warning, I presume?" the commander asked, sighing.
"The Sishan leader is a master magician," Valak said, a hint of annoyance in his voice. He probably wasn't used to being sighed at.
"That's to be expected. How else could they know we're sincere about creating a trade treaty? We could have ambushed them instead. It's a logical move."
Unconcerned, the commander turned toward the door. "She doesn't trouble you?" Valak asked. "She's tried to kill Yelena." The commander looked at me for the first time since we had entered the war room.
"It would be unwise to kill my food taster. Such an act could be misinterpreted as an assassination attempt and halt negotiations. Yelena is safe. For now."
He shrugged off any more thought of my future safety and left the war room. Valak grimaced. "Damn. Now what?" I asked. He kicked at one of the conference chairs. "I anticipated a magician with the Southern delegation, but not her." He shook his head as if to clear the frustration that gripped his voice. "I'll leave the power twins assigned to you while she's here. Although if she's determined to get you, there's nothing they or I can do. I lucked out with Mogkin. I was just around the corner when I felt his power surge. Let's hope she behaves while she's a guest in our land." Valak pushed the chair against the table with a loud bang. "At least I know where all the magicians are. Mogkin was the one I felt during the General's brandy meeting. And the Southern Master is now in the castle. Unless any more decide to show up, we should be safe." "What about Captain Star?" I asked.
"Star's a charlatan. Her claims of being a magician are just a tactic for scaring her informers so they don't double-cross her," Valak sighed. "Generals, sessions, and feasts increase my workload. Which reminds me, you need to stay for the entire feast tonight. A tiresome chore, but at least the food should be good. I've heard Rand wanted to use the Criollo for a new dessert, but the commander refused his request." Another puzzle, since Brazel has been sending the stuff by the wagon load, and has promised to ship the dessert to all the other generals. They were clamoring after it like it was gold. I saw a flash in Valak's eye. "Any unusual symptoms, feelings, or appetite since you stopped eating the Criollo?" It had been 3 days since I had eaten a piece, and I couldn't recall any actual physical symptoms that might be linked to it. Eating it had lifted my spirits and given me a boost of energy. I longed for its sweet taste, especially now that my chances for freedom had dwindled. "A mild craving," I told Valak, "but nothing like an addiction. I find myself thinking about it from time to time, wishing for a piece." Valak frowned. "It might be too soon. The Criollo could still be in your bloodstream. You'll inform me if something happens."
"Yes."
"Good. I'll see you tonight."
Poor Valak, I thought, stuffed into his dress uniform 3 times in as many days. Elaborate decorations had been hung in the dining room for the feast. Crimson and black drapes hung along the walls, and red and gold streamers twisted and dipped from the ceiling. The room was ablaze with light. An elevated platform had been constructed to support a head table where the Southern delegation, the commander, and Valak all wore their finest clothes. High-ranking officers and upper-level advisors were seated at round tables circling the room, leaving the middle empty. In the corner, a 12-piece band played sedate music, which was a surprise since the commander frowned on music, considering it a waste of time. I sat behind Commander Ambrose so he could pass his plate to me. As predicted, the food was marvelous. Rand had outdone himself. My dark uniform blended in with the black drapes along the wall, and since I doubted anyone beyond the dais noticed I was there, I watched the others as I waited between courses. Ari and Jenko sat next to each other at a table by the door. Attending their first formal function as captains, they were clearly uncomfortable. Knowing them, I was sure they would rather be drinking beer with their comrades back in the barracks. Iris and her retinue were seated to the commander's left. Their formal robes had swirls of color and glittered in the firelight. Iris wore a diamond pendant shaped like a flower, which sparkled on her chest. She ignored my presence, which was fine with me. After the servants cleared the meal from the tables, they extinguished half of the lanterns. The band quickened their tempo until a pulsating rhythm vibrated the glassware on the tabletops. Costumed dancers burst into the room, holding blazing staffs high above their heads. Fire dancers! They performed an intricate and complex routine. Watching them whirl and spin to the beat left me gasping for breath. I understood now why their festival tent had been so packed with enthusiastic fans. At one point, Valak leaned back in his chair and said to me, "I don't think I would have made it past the audition, Yelena. I probably would have set my hair on fire by this point." "What's a singed head for the sake of art?" I teased. He laughed. The mood of the room was energetic and elated. I hoped the commander wouldn't wait 15 more years before having another feast. The dancers finished their second encore and exited the room. Iris rose to offer a toast. The Sissians had brought their finest cognac. Iris poured a glass for the commander, Valak, and herself. She didn't seem offended when the commander's goblet passed to me. I swirled the amber liquid and inhaled the sharp odor. Taking a small sip, I rolled the cognac around my tongue, then spat it onto the floor. Gagging and retching with the effort, I tried to expel every last bit of it from my mouth. Valak stared in alarm. I choked out, "My love." Valak knocked over the other two glasses, spilling their contents on the table. As my body reacted to the poison, I watched Valak turn into a black ink spot and the walls run with blood. I floated on a crimson sea, colors dancing and whirling around my head. The sound of broken glass raining on stones created an odd melody in my mind. I drifted on a raft made of curly white hair, carried along by a strong current. Iris's soothing voice spoke amidst the tempest of colors. "You'll be fine. Just hold on to your life raft. You can ride out this storm." I awoke in my room. A dim lantern had been lit, and Jenko sat in a chair, reading a book. This was much nicer than the last time I had tasted my love. A soft bed was preferable to lying in a pool of my own vomit, although this habit of waking in my room without knowing how I got here had to stop. "Why, Jenko, I didn't know you could read," I teased. My voice was hoarse, my throat sore, and a dull ache resided deep in my head.
"I'm a man of many unknown talents," Jenko smiled. "Welcome back."
"How long have I been out?"
2 days.
"What happened?"
"After you turned into a madwoman?" Jenko asked. "Or why you turned into one?"
I grimaced. "After."
"It's amazing how fast Valak can move," Jenko said with admiration. "He pushed you out of sight onto the floor while corking the tainted bottle and using some sleight of hand to swap it for another. He apologized to everyone about being clumsy and proceeded to pour 3 new glasses so that Southern Witch could make her phony toast. The whole incident was smoothed over so quick that only the people on the dais knew what really happened."
Jenko scratched at his goatee.
"Well, they and Ari. He had his eye on you all night, so when you went down, we were on our way. We slipped behind the head table during the toast, and he carried you here. He'd still be here, but I forced him at knife point to get some sleep."
Ah, that explained my curly-haired raft. I sat up. The ache in my head intensified. A water pitcher rested on my night table. I poured a glass, draining it dry.
"Valak said you'd be thirsty. He's been here a couple of times, but he's been busy with the Southerners. I can't believe that witch had the audacity to try to poison the commander."
"She didn't. Remember? She poured 3 glasses from the same bottle. Someone else must have," I said. But the culprit eluded me as the effort of concentrating made my head pound.
"Unless she was going for a murder-suicide. A quick death instead of waiting in our dungeon to be hanged."
"Possible," I said, but I thought it unlikely.
"Valak must agree with you. The treaty discussions are proceeding as if nothing happened."
Jenko yawned.
"Well, Now that you're coherent again, I'll get some sleep. It's another 4 hours until dawn.
Jenko pushed me back down on the bed.
Get some rest. We'll be back in the morning.
He studied me, indecision creasing his face.
Ari said you screamed and raved a lot while he took care of you. In fact, he said that if Rayad was alive today, he'd gut the bastard without a moment's hesitation. I just thought you might want to know.
Jenko gave me a brotherly kiss on the forehead and left.
Oh, great, I groaned.
What else did Ari know? How would I be able to face him in the morning? Well, I thought, nothing I could do about it now. I tried to go back to sleep, but my empty stomach kept growling. All I could think of was food. I examined my hunger, trying to deduce if it was a mental command from Iris like Modkin had done to me before, but I couldn't come up with a good reason why she would summon me. Once I had decided to risk the trip, I strapped on my switchblade and made my way on wobbly legs to the kitchen, where I hoped to sneak in and grab some bread before Rand woke up to start his dough. Slicing off a chunk of cheese to eat along with my loaf, I was about to leave when Rand's door opened.
Yelena, he said in surprise.
Morning, Rand. Just stealing some food.
I haven't seen you in weeks, he grumped. Where have you been?
He moved toward the ovens. Opening the first black metal door, he stoked the embers of the fire and added more coal.
I've been busy. You know, the generals, the delegation, the feast.
Which, by the way, was magnificent, Rand. You're a genius. He perked up after I appealed to his ego. I resigned myself to the fact that, if I wanted him to think we were still friends, I would have to talk to him. I placed my breakfast on a table and pulled up a stool. Rand limped toward me.
Someone said you were sick?
Yeah, stomach bug. Haven't eaten in 2 days, but I'm better now, I gestured to the bread.
Hold off. I'll make you some sweet cakes.
I watched him mix the batter, making sure he didn't slip in a poisonous ingredient. But after the cakes were under my nose, I dug into them with mindless abandon. The familiar scene of Rand making bread while I sat close by dissolved the awkwardness between us. We were soon chatting and laughing. It wasn't until his questions turned pointed and specific that I realized Rand was pumping me for information about the commander and Valak. I clenched my fork, stabbing it hard into my sweet cakes.
Hear anything about this southern treaty? Rand asked.
No.
My tone was harsh, and he looked at me with curiosity.
Sorry. I'm tired. I better get back to bed.
Before you go, you might as well take these beans along.
Rand pulled down the glass jar.
I've sautéed, ground, even boiled them, but they still taste unrecognizably terrible.
He poured them into a bag and went to check on his baking fires. Watching him stir the glowing coals gave me an idea. Maybe they're not to eat, I said. Maybe they're a source of fuel. The southern pods had been delivered to Brazil's new factory. Perhaps he was using them to heat his ovens.
Worth a try, Rand said.
I threw the beans into the hearth fire. We waited for a while, but there were no sudden flames or increase in temperature. While Rand switched his bread pans, I stared into the embers, thinking that as far as the mystery of the beans was concerned, I was out of options. When Rand started again with his questions, I turned my eyes away from the oven's fire. Pressure knotted in my throat. I'd better get going, or Valak will be wondering where I am.
Yes, by all means, go. I noticed you and Valak have become close. Tell him for me, not to kill anybody, will you?
Sarcasm rendered Rand's voice sharp. I lost control and slammed the oven door shut. It echoed in the quiet kitchen. At least Valak has the decency to inform me when he's poisoning me, I blurted out, but wished I could pull the words from the air and stuff them back into my mouth. Blaming my fatigue, my anger, or Rand for my outburst wouldn't erase what I had just said. His facial expressions contorted and vacillated from surprise to guilt to anger.
Did Star tell you? He demanded.
I was at a loss. If I said yes, he would find out from Star that I was lying. And if I said no, he would insist on knowing my source. Either way, he'd figure it out. I had just revealed Valak's entire undercover operation. Fortunately, Rand didn't wait for me to answer before launching into a tirade.
I should have known she would tell you. She loves to play nasty head games. When you came along, I didn't want to know you. All I wanted was the heap of gold credit that Star offered to apply to my debt if I spiked Valak's test.
Rand pounded the table.
Then my damn morals and your damn niceness complicated things. Selling information about you, then having to protect you without looking like I was protecting you made my life hell.
Sorry for the inconvenience, I said. I guess I should be grateful, poisonings and kidnappings aside. Sarcasm sharpened my voice.
Rand rubbed his hands over his face. His anger had dissipated. I'm sorry, Yelena. I was backed into a corner, and I couldn't get out without hurting someone.
I softened. Why did Star want me poisoned?
General Bruzel commissioned her. That shouldn't be a surprise.
No. I thought for a moment and then asked, Rand, is there anyone who can help you get out of this mess? Maybe Valak?
Absolutely not. Why do you have such an elevated opinion of him? He's a murderer. You should hate him just for giving you butterfly's dust. I would.
Who told you? I demanded. Who else knows? I thought only the commander and Valak knew.
Your predecessor, Oskov, told me why he never tried to run, and no, I haven't sold that information to anyone. I do have limits.
He tugged at his apron.
Oskov's hatred of Valak rivaled my own, and I understood that. But your relationship with Valak...
Rand's furrowed brows spiked up toward his forehead.
You're in love with him, he cried.
That's preposterous, I shouted. We gaped at each other, too stunned to say anything more. Then a sweet, nutty aroma reached my nose. Rand, too, sniffed the air. I followed the scent to the oven, where I had tossed the mystery beans into the fire. Opening the door, I was greeted by a strong puff of heavenly scent. Criollo.
Chapter 27.
Where did you find those beans? Rand asked. They're the missing ingredient to the Criollo recipe. I didn't think of roasting them to change the flavor.
A storeroom downstairs, I lied. I wasn't about to tell him that Valak and I had intercepted them on the way to Brazel's new factory, which, I now realized, was probably not producing feed, but manufacturing Criollo.
Which storeroom? Rand asked, a hint of desperation in his voice.
I don't remember.
Try harder. If I can duplicate Ving's recipe for Criollo, then maybe I won't be transferred.
Transferred? Where?
You mean Valak hasn't gloated over it by now? He's wanted to get rid of me since the takeover. I'm being sent to Brazel's manor house, and Ving will come here. He won't last a week.
Rand spat the words out with bitter force.
When? Don't know. I haven't gotten my transfer papers yet. So there's some hope to stop it. If you can find me those beans.
He thinks we're still friends, I realized in amazement. Even after admitting to poisoning me and accusing me of loving his enemy, he believes I'll do it for him. I had no response. I stalled. I'll try, I said, then made a hasty exit. The first flicker of dawn was cresting the Sol Mountains as I arrived at Valak's suite unseen. The tall windows in the living area faced east, and in the weak gray light I saw Valak's profile as he sat on the couch, waiting for me.
"Back so soon?" he asked.
"Too bad. I was just about to organize a search for your dead body. What happened when you knocked on the southerner magician's door to sacrifice yourself? Did they kick you out, thinking you too half-witted to waste their time on?"
I plopped on a chair to wait out Valak's sarcastic lecture. No excuse I could offer would satisfy him.
He was right. Going out alone had been a foolish thing to do, but logic and an empty stomach were like oil and water. They didn't mix. When he was quiet, I asked, "Are you done?"
"What? No rebuttal?"
I shook my head.
"Then I'm finished."
"Good," I said. Since you're already in a bad mood, I might as well tell you what happened while I was in the kitchen. Actually, two things. One bad, one good. Which would you like to hear first?
The bad, Valak answered. That allows me the hope that the good will balance things out.
I braced myself and admitted to revealing his undercover operation. Valak's face hardened.
It's your fault. I was defending you, I blurted.
He paused. In protecting my honor, you exposed months of work. I should be flattered.
You should, I said.
I wasn't about to feel guilty. If he hadn't tested my loyalty with Star and then used me to further his investigation, he wouldn't be in this situation.
His shoulders drooped as he leaned back on the couch, kneading his temples.
I hadn't planned on making arrests till later this month. Better implement my cleanup plan before Rand has a chance to alert Star.
Valak rubbed his eyes.
Still, this might be a benefit. I think Star's becoming suspicious. She hasn't been conducting any illicit business in her office. If I bring her in now, I might discover who hired her to poison the Sishin's bottle.
Star? How?
She has a southern assassin in her employ. He would be the only one with the skill and the opportunity. I'm sure the poisoning wasn't a result of Star's personal political views. Her organization would do anything for anybody for the right price. I must find out who would risk so much to compromise the delegation.
He stood up, energized.
What's the good news?
The mystery beans are an ingredient in making Criollo.
Then why did Brazel lie on his permit application?
There's no law against manufacturing a dessert, Valak said, matching my leap of logic about the true nature of Brazel's factory.
Perhaps because the beans are imported from Citia, I theorized.
That would be illegal, at least until the trade treaty is finalized.
Maybe Brazel's been using other southern ingredients or equipment as well.
Possible. Which is why he was so eager to have a treaty.
You'll have to take a good look around when you visit the factory.
What?
The commander has scheduled a trip to MD5 when the southerners leave. And where the commander goes, you go.
What about you? You're going too, aren't you?
The panic welling in my throat made my voice squeak.
No, I've been ordered to stay here.
1 and 2 and 3, 4, 5, keep fighting like this and you will die, Janko sang.
I was pinned against the wall. My bow clattered to the floor as Janko's staff tapped my temple, emphasizing his point.
What's wrong? You're rarely this easy to beat.
Janko leaned on his bow.
Too distracted, I said.
It was only a day ago that Valak had informed me of the commander's plans.
Then what are we doing here? Ari asked.
He and Marin had watched the match. Still uncomfortable about what he might have heard when I was delusional, I had a hard time meeting Ari's gaze.
Next round I'll try harder, I said as Janko and I caught our breath.
Reviewing our fight, I asked Janko, why do you rhyme when you fight?
It helps keep my rhythm.
Don't the other soldiers give you a hard time about it?
Not when I beat them.
We started another match. I made an effort to concentrate, but was beaten again.
Now you're trying too hard. I can see you planning each offensive move, Janko said. You're giving yourself away, and I'm there for the block before you even strike.
Ari added, we drill for a reason. Offensive and defensive moves must be instinctive. Let your mind relax, but stay alert. Block out all distractions. Stay focused on your opponent, but not too focused.
That's a contradiction, I cried in frustration.
It works, was all Ari said.
I took a couple of deep breaths and cleared the distressing thoughts of my upcoming trip to Brazel's district from my mind. Rubbing my hands along the bow, I concentrated instead on the smooth solidness of the weapon. I hefted it in my grip, trying to make a connection, creating an extension of my thoughts through the bow. A light vibration tingled through my fingertips as I traced the wood grain. My consciousness flowed through the bow, twisting and turning along the grain and back along my arm. I possessed the bow and my body at the same time. I moved into the third round with a sense of heightened awareness. Intuitively, I knew what Janko was planning. A split second before he moved, I had my bow up to block. Instead of scrambling to defend myself, I had more time to counter as well as block. I pushed Jenko back. A beat of music pulsed in my mind, and I allowed it to guide my attack. I won the match.
Amazing, Jenko shouted. Did you follow Ari's advice?
To the letter.
Can you do it again? Ari asked.
Don't know.
Try me.
Ari snatched his bow and assumed a fighting stance. I rubbed my fingers along the bow's wooden grain, setting my mind back into its previous mental zone. It was easier the second time. Ari was a bigger opponent than Jenko. What he lacked in speed, he made up for in strength. I had to modify my defense by dodging his strikes, or he would have knocked me off my feet. Using my smaller size to duck under one of his blows, I swept my bow behind his ankles and yanked. He dropped like a sack of cornmeal. I had won again.
Unbelievable, Jenko said.
My turn, Marin challenged.
Again, I tuned into that mental zone. Marin's attacks were panther quick. She favored the fake jab to the face, which usually lured my guard up and away from protecting my torso, leaving it exposed for a body strike. This time, I was one step ahead of her, ignoring the fake and blocking the blow. A clever opponent, she applied tactics instead of speed or strength. She charged me, and I knew she planned to move to my side when I stepped up to engage her. Instead of moving up, I spun and tripped her with my bow. Pouncing on her prone form, I pressed my staff against her neck until she conceded the match.
Damn, she said. When a student starts beating her teacher, it means she doesn't need her anymore. I'm walking.
Marin strode from the room. Ari, Jenko, and I looked at each other. She's kidding, right? I asked.
Blow to her ego. She'll get over it, Ari said. Unless you start beating her every time you fight.
Unlikely, I said. Very, huffed Jenko, who was probably nursing his own bruised ego.
That's enough fighting, Ari said. Yelena, why don't you do some katas to cool down, and we'll quit for the day.
A kata was a fixed routine of different defensive and offensive blocks and strikes. Each kata had a name, and they grew more complex with each skill level. I started with a simple defensive bow kata. As I moved, I watched Ari and Jenko become absorbed in conversation. I smiled, thinking that they bickered like an old married couple, and then concentrated on my kata. I practiced finding my mental fighting zone, sliding into and out of it while I performed the appropriate kata moves. Panting, I finished the routine and noticed Iris watching me from the doorway with great interest. She was wearing her Hawk Mistress uniform. Her hair had been tied back in accordance to Ixia's military regulations. She had probably walked through the castle unchallenged. I glanced toward my bodyguards. They were engrossed in their conversation, ignoring Iris and me. Uneasiness rolled in my stomach. I inched closer to my companions as she came into the room. "Won't Valak sense your magic?" I asked her, gesturing to Ari and Jenko.
"He's on the other side of the castle," she said as she stepped nearer. "But I did feel someone pulling power before we arrived. Two brief surges. So there is, or was, another magician in the castle."
"Wouldn't you know?" I asked in alarm.
"Unfortunately, no.
But you do know who it is, right?" She shook her head.
"There are several magicians that have disappeared. They're either dead or hiding. And some keep to themselves, and we never know about them. It could be anyone. I can only identify a magician if I have established a link with him or her, as I have linked with you."
Iris examined the weapons lined against the wall.
"What's wrong with the commander?" she asked. "His thoughts are practically dripping out of his head. He's so open. I could go in and extract any information I wanted if it weren't against our moral code of ethics."
I couldn't answer her. "What are you doing here?" I asked instead. Iris smiled. She gestured to the bow in my hands.
"What were you doing with that weapon?"
Seeing no reason to lie, I explained about my training.
"How did you do today?" she asked.
"I beat all three opponents for the first time."
"Interesting."
Iris seemed pleased. I glanced over at Ari and Jenko, who were still involved in their conversation. Why are you here? I asked again. You promised me a year. Then I had a sudden, horrific thought. Am I closer to flame out?
There's still time. You've stabilized for now, but how close are you to coming to Sitia?
The antidote is beyond my reach, unless you can steal the information from Valak's mind?
She frowned. Impossible. But my healers say if you can filch enough antidote to last a month, there is a possibility we can remove the poison from your body. Come with us when we leave. I have an advisor just your size. She'll wear your uniform and lure Valak and his men away while you take her place. With a mask on, no one would know.
Iris spoke with assurance. She was either unconcerned or unaware of the risks. Hope bloomed in my chest. My heart raced. I had to calm myself with a cold reminder that Iris had said there was a possibility of removing the poison. In other words, no guarantees. The escape plan appeared straightforward, but I searched for loopholes anyway. I knew better than to fully trust her. Deciding, I said, "Advisor Mogkin was here last week. Is he one of your spies?"
Mogkin. Mogkin.
She turned the name over her tongue. Tall, with gray eyes, and wears his long black hair in a single braid. I formed a picture of him in my mind. Valak said he has power.
Kangam. How unoriginal. He dropped from sight 10 years ago. There was a big scandal about his alleged involvement with some kidnapping ring.
Oh. Iris inhaled sharply and studied my face. Giving her head a tight shake, she asked with keen interest,
"So where has he been hiding?"
MD5. Is he wanted?
Only if he becomes a danger to Sitia. But that explains why we've been picking up occasional flares of magic from that direction.
She cocked her head as if straining to hear some faint music.
There is a faint flow of magic to the castle. It could be from Kangam, Mogkin, although it's highly unlikely. He doesn't have that kind of strength. It's probably just a tiny ripple in the power source, like a loop of thread hanging down. It happens from time to time. But I did feel someone pulling power recently.
She paused, staring at me with her direct emerald gaze.
Are you coming with me?
Mogkin's magic might not concern her, but it concerned me. There seemed to be a link between Mogkin's magic and the commander's unusual behavior, but I couldn't quite grasp the reason why. Undecided, I rolled it around my mind, much as I moved food in my mouth, tasting for danger. Running away had always been an automatic defensive move, and going south offered my best chance for survival. Months ago, I would have jumped at the offer, but now I felt as if I would be abandoning ship too soon, that there was a remedy yet to be discovered. No, I said, not yet.
Are you crazy?
Probably, but I need to finish something first. Then I'll keep my promise and come to Sitia.
If you're still alive.
Maybe you can help me. Is there some way I can shield my mind from magical influence? Iris cocked her head.
You're worried about Kangam?
Very.
I think so. You're strong enough to handle it.
She handed me the bow.
Do one of your katas. Eyes closed, and clear your mind.
I started a blocking bow kata.
Imagine one brick. Place the brick on the ground, and then make a row of them. Using imaginary mortar, build another row. Keep building until you have a wall as high as your head.
I did as she instructed and heard a distinct tone as each brick was laid. A wall formed in my mind.
Stop. She ordered. Open your eyes.
My wall disappeared.
Now block me.
Loud music vibrated in my head, overwhelming me.
Imagine your wall, Iris shouted.
My brick defense flashed complete in my mind. The music stopped mid-note.
Very good. I suggest you finish your business and escape south. With that kind of strength, if you don't achieve complete control of your magic, someone else might grab it and use it, leaving you a mindless slave.
Annoyance quirked her face as she spun on her heel and left the training room. The moment the door clicked into place, Ari and Jenko ended their conversation and blinked as if they had just woken from a deep sleep.
"Done already? How many katas?" Ari asked.
I laughed and put my bow away. "Come on, I'm hungry." When the Sishin delegation left 3 days later, I had a sudden panic attack. What the hell was I doing? My one perfect opportunity for escape had slipped away to the south, while I remained behind, preparing to leave for Brazel's manor. Iris had been right. I was crazy. My breath hitched every time I thought of the trip. The commander's retinue was scheduled to depart in the morning. I rushed around the castle, packing my own special provisions for the journey. Delana's sorrowful face greeted me when I stopped by her room for some traveling clothes. Rand's paperwork had been finalized, she said. He was coming with us. I requested a transfer, but I doubt it'll be approved, Delana said as she searched through her piles of clothing. If only the lout had married me, then we wouldn't be in this predicament. There's still time to submit the application. If it's approved, you can travel to MD5 for the wedding. He doesn't want to let anyone know how much he cares for me. He's worried that my safety might be used as leverage against him. She shook her head, refusing to be cheered even when I told her that the new trade treaty with Citia would allow silk to be imported. The Southern Treaty was a simple exchange of goods. Specific items were listed. Only merchants with the proper permits and licenses would be able to buy and sell these items at a fixed price. All caravans would be subject to inspection when crossing the Ixian border at the approved locations. Rand's cup of coffee was only a few months away, but I doubted he would brew some for me since I hadn't spoken to him since our argument in the kitchen. I couldn't get him more beans, and I couldn't explain why. The morning of our departure was gray and overcast, hinting at snow. The cold season was beginning, which usually indicated the end of travel, not the onset of it. The snows would most likely keep the commander's retinue at Brazel's until the thawing season. I shuddered at the thought. Valak stopped me before I left our suite. This is a very dangerous trip for you. Maintain a low profile and keep your eyes open. Question thoughts in your mind. They might not be your own. He handed me a silver flask. The commander has your daily dose of antidote, but if he forgets to give it to you, here's a backup supply. Tell no one that you have it, and keep it hidden. For the first time, Valak trusted me. The metal flask felt warm in my hands. Thanks. A feather of fear brushed my stomach as I packed the flask into my backpack. Another danger I hadn't recognized. What else had I missed?
Wait, Yelena.
There's one more thing. Valak's manner and tone were strangely stiff and formal.
I want you to have this.
He extended his hand. On his palm sat the beautiful butterfly he had carved. Silver spots on the wings glinted in the sunlight, and a silver chain hung from a small hole drilled into its body. Valak looped the necklace around my neck.
When I carved this statue, I was thinking about you. Delicate in appearance, but with a strength unnoticed at first glance.
His eyes met mine.
My chest felt tight. Valak acted as if he would never see me again. His fear for my safety seemed genuine. But was he worried about me, or his precious food taster?
Chapter 28. Commander Ambrose's traveling entourage consisted of nearly 50 soldiers from his elite guard. Some led the way, others walked beside the commander and his advisors atop their horses. Guards also bracketed the small group of servants, who preceded the horses. The remaining soldiers followed behind. Ari and Jenko scouted the commander's planned route and were hours ahead of the procession. We advanced at a brisk pace in the crisp morning air. The vivid colors of the hot season had long since drained from the forest, leaving behind a barren, gray-hued simplicity. I had tucked Valak's butterfly underneath my shirt and found myself fingering the lump it made on my chest as we traveled.
Valak's gift had caused my emotions to roil. Just when I believed I had figured him out, he surprised me. Carrying a pack, I also held a walking staff that was a thinly disguised bow. A few of the guards cast suspicious glances my way, but I ignored them. Rand refused to meet my gaze. He stared straight ahead in stony silence. It wasn't long before he lagged behind. His leg prevented him from maintaining the pace. After a stop for lunch, we continued until an hour before sunset. Major Granton, the official leader of the expedition, wanted to set up camp in the daylight. Spacious tents were raised for the commander and his advisors, and smaller two-man tents were erected for the servants. I found I would share a space with a woman named Bria, who ran errands and served the commander's advisors. I settled into the tent while Bria warmed herself by the fire. Lighting a small lantern, I pulled out the book on war symbols that I had borrowed from Valak. After we had deciphered the name of the new successor, I hadn't had a spare moment to interpret Janko's message on my switchblade. There were 6 silver markings etched into the wooden handle. I began with the top and worked my way to the bottom. My smile grew wider with each translation. Janko could be so annoying, but underneath he could be so sweet. When Bria entered the tent smelling of wood smoke, I shoved the book into my pack. Disturbing dreams made for a restless night. I awoke tired in the gray fuzz of dawn. With the amount of time the procession took to eat and reassemble, plus the shorter hours of daylight, I estimated the excursion to Brazel's manor house would take about 5 days. On the second night of the trip, I found a note in my tent. A request for a rendezvous. The next evening, while the soldiers set up camp, I was to follow a small northbound trail that intersected the main road just past our campsite. The message was signed Janko in a lavish hand. I examined the signature in the fading light, trying to remember if I'd ever seen Janko's writing. Genuine note or a trap? Should I go or should I stay in camp where it would be safe? I worried the question in my mind throughout the night and all through the third day on the road. What would Valak do in this particular situation? The answer helped me to form a plan. When the signal to stop for the night sounded, I waited until everyone was occupied before leaving the clearing. Once out of sight, I swept off my cloak and turned it inside out. Before departing the castle, I had procured gray cloth from Delana, which I had then sewn into the inside lining of my cloak just in case I needed to hide in the winter landscape. I hoped the improvised ashen camouflage would be adequate in concealing my presence when I neared the meeting site. I strapped my bow to my back, sheathed my switchblade on my right leg, then grabbed my rope and grappling hook from my backpack. I found the northern trail. Rather than walk down the narrow path, though, I sought a suitable tree and tossed my hook up into its branches. My first concern was the potential noise of my passage through the treetops, but I soon discovered that trees without leaves only creaked under my weight as I followed the trail. Maneuvering close to the meeting site, I spotted a tall, dark-haired man waiting at the prearranged location. He seemed restless and agitated. Too thin for Janko, I thought. Then the man turned in my direction. Rand. What was he doing here? I circled the clearing. Discovering no threat lurking in the bushes, I climbed down to the path, leaving my rope hanging from the branch. I tucked my backpack behind the tree's trunk. "Damn," Rand cursed. "I thought you weren't going to show." His haggard face had dark smudges under his eyes. "And I thought Janko was supposed to be here." "I wanted to explain, but there's no time, Yelena." Rand's haunted eyes bored into mine. "It's a trap. Run!" "How many? Where?" I demanded, pulling the bow from my back. I scanned the woods. "Star and 2 goons. Close. Leading you here was supposed to pay off my debt." Tears streaked Rand's face. I spun on him. "Well, you did a good job. I see you're actually following through on this assignment." I spat the words at him. "No," he cried. "I can't do it. Run, damn you, run." Just as I moved to go, Rand's eyes widened with fright. "No!" He shoved me aside. Something whistled past my ear as I fell to the ground. Rand dropped beside me, an arrow in his chest. Blood welled, soaking his white uniform shirt. "Run," he whispered. "Run." "No, Rand," I said, brushing the dirt from his face. "I'm tired of running."
Forgive me, please.
He clutched my hand as his eyes beseeched me through tears of pain. You're forgiven. He sighed once, then stopped breathing. The shine in his brown eyes dulled. I pulled his hood over his head.
Get up, a man's voice ordered.
I looked into the dangerous end of a loaded crossbow. Leaning on my bow, I rose. With my weight balanced on the balls of my feet, I rubbed my hands along the wooden staff, finding my zone of concentration.
The area is secured, Captain, the man called out to the woods. Don't move, he said to me, leveling his weapon at my chest.
Footsteps approached. The man took his eyes off me to look for his companions. I moved. My first bow strike landed across his forearms. The crossbow sailed from his hands, firing into the woods. My second strike went to the back of his knees. I knocked his feet out from under him. Lying flat on his back, he blinked at me with a stunned expression. Before he could draw breath, I slammed the point of my bow straight down onto his neck, crushing his windpipe.
A quick glance over my shoulder revealed Star and another man rushing into the clearing.
Star shouted and pointed. Her goon drew his sword. I raced down the trail, his heavy footsteps thundering after me. When I reached my rope, I tossed my bow into the woods before scrambling up into the tree. The man's blade stabbed at my legs. Cloth ripped as his sword cut through my pants. The brush of cool steel on my thigh spurred me on. He cursed as I leaped to the next tree. Moving fast, I swung through the treetops. When the sound of his crashing through the underbrush was far enough behind me, I found a good place to hide. Wrapping myself in my cloak, I hunkered down on a low branch and waited. Star's thug barreled through the woods. Not far from my perch, he stopped to listen, searching the treetops. My heart raced. I muffled my heavy breathing with my cloak. Sword raised, he hunted for me. When he was below me, I threw off my cloak and launched myself, hitting his back with my feet. We fell hard. I rolled away and stood before he could recover, then kicked his sword from his hand. He was faster than I had anticipated. He grabbed my ankle, yanking me down. Next thing I knew, his weight pressed on top of me and his hands were wrapped around my neck. Banging my head on the hard ground, he muttered, "That's for giving me trouble." Then he pressed his thumbs deep into my throat. Dazed and choking, I plucked at his arms before I remembered my switchblade. I fumbled in my pockets as my vision blurred, turning to snow. The smooth feel of wood greeted my fingertips. I grasped the handle, pulled it out, and triggered the button. The snick of the blade caused fear to flicker in his eyes. For a moment, he stared straight into my essence. Then I plunged the knife into his stomach. With a low growl, he increased the pressure on my neck. Blood, hot and sticky, ran down my arms, soaking my shirt. Through dizziness and pain, I jerked the weapon out and tried again. This time, I pointed the tip of the blade up toward his heart. The man hunched forward, driving the knife in farther, and finally collapsed. The dead man's weight impeded my starved lungs. Summoning my last bit of strength, I rolled his body off of me. Dazed, I wiped my switchblade clean in the dirt, found my bow, and went in search of Star. Two men. I had just killed two men. A killing machine. I hadn't even hesitated. Fear and rage settled deep in my chest, forming a layer of ice around my heart. Star hadn't gone far. She waited in the clearing. Her red hair blazed against the dark gray background of the forest dusk. Night would soon be on us. She made a small noise of surprise when I stepped clear of the trees. Peering through the gloom, she studied the blood on my shirt. The wet material clung to my skin. When she saw I was unharmed, her sharp nose jerked her head around, searching for her goon. "He's dead," I said. The color drained from her face.
"We can work this out,"
a pleading note entered her voice. "No, we can't. If I let you walk away, you'll only return with more men. If I take you to the commander, I'd have to answer for killing your thugs. I'm out of options." I stepped toward her, my body frozen with dread. The others I had killed in self-defense during the heat of battle. This would be difficult. This would be premeditated.
"Yelena, stop," someone called from behind me.
I spun. One of the commander's soldiers stood with a sword in his hand. As he moved closer, I judged the distance between us. He must have recognized my battle stance because he stopped and sheathed his sword. Pulling the wool cap off his head, he let his black curls spring free. "I thought you had orders to stay at the castle," I said to Valak. "Won't you be court-martialed?" "And I thought your killing days were over," he replied as he examined the prone form of Star's thug. His crushed windpipe had suffocated him. "Tell you what, if you don't tell, I won't. That way we can both avoid the noose. Deal?" I jerked my head at Star. "What about her?" "There's an arrest warrant out for her. Did you even consider taking her to the commander?" "No." "Why not?" Valak didn't try to hide his disbelief. "Killing isn't the only solution to a problem. Or has that been your formula?" "My formula? Excuse me, Mr. Assassin, while I laugh as I remember my history lessons on how to deal with a tyrannical monarch by killing him and his family." Valak flashed me a dangerous look. I was on the edge. "Changing tactics," I said. "My actions were based on what I thought you would do if you were ambushed." He considered my words in silence for an uncomfortable length of time. Star seemed horrified by our discussion. She glanced around as if planning her escape. "You really don't know me at all," Valak said. "Think about it, Valak. If I took her to the commander and explained the details, what would happen to me?" The sad knowledge in his face said it all. I would be arrested for killing Star's men, the food taster's job would pass on to the next prisoner awaiting execution, and I would spend my last few days in a dank dungeon. "Well then, it was fortunate for both of you that I arrived," Valak said. He whistled a strange bird call just as Star made her escape. She dashed down the trail. I moved to follow, but Valak told me to wait. Two gray forms materialized from the dark forest on either side of the road. They grabbed Star. She yelped in surprise and anger. "Take her back to the castle," Valak ordered. "I'll deal with her when I get back. Oh, and send a cleanup crew. I don't want anyone stumbling onto this mess." They began to pull Star away.
"Wait," she said. "I have information. If you release me, I'll tell you who plotted to ruin the Sishan Treaty."
"Don't worry." Valak's blue eyes held an icy glare. "You'll tell me." He was about to walk past her when he paused. "However, if you want to reveal your patron now, then we can skip a painful interrogation later." Star's nose twitched as she considered his offer. Even in this situation, she was still the shrewd businesswoman. "Lying would only worsen your predicament," Valak warned.
"Kangum," she said through clenched teeth. "He wore a basic soldier's uniform with MD-8 colors."
"General Dino," Valak said without surprise. "Describe Kangum," I ordered, knowing that Kangum was another name for Advisor Mogkin, but unable to tell Valak how I'd come by this information.
"Tall, long black hair in a soldier's braid. An arrogant bastard. I almost kicked him out, but he showed me a pile of gold I couldn't refuse," Star said.
"Anything else?" Valak asked. Star shook her head. Valak snapped his fingers. As the camouflaged man escorted Star back toward the castle, I said, "Could it be Mogkin?" "Mogkin?" Valak looked at me as if I had sprouted antennae. "No. Brazel was far too happy about the delegation. Why would he jeopardize the treaty? That doesn't make sense. Dino, on the other hand, was furious with the commander. He probably sent one of his men to hire Star." I tried to fathom the reason why Mogkin would endanger the treaty negotiations when trade with Citia was to Brazel's benefit. Unable to deduce a logical answer, I wondered how I could convince Valak that Mogkin had hired Star. I began to shiver. Blood soaked my uniform shirt and stained my hands. I wiped the blood on my ripped pants. Retracing my steps, I found my cloak, but before I could swing it over my shoulders, Valak said, "You better leave your clothes here. There would be quite a fuss if you showed up for dinner soaked with blood." I retrieved my pack from behind the tree. Valak turned his back while I changed into a clean uniform. I wondered if he had any more sneaks in the woods as I wrapped my cloak around me. We set out for the camp. "By the way, nice work," Valak said as we passed the second dead body.
I saw the fight. I wasn't close enough to help. You held your own. Who gave you the knife?
I bought it with Star's money. A stretch of the truth, but I wasn't about to get Jenko into trouble.
Valak snorted. Fitting.
When we arrived, Valak melted into a group of soldiers while I rushed to the commander's tent to taste his dinner. The entire Star episode had taken only an hour and a half, but my battered body felt as if I'd been gone for days. As I sat by the campfire that night, my muscles trembled in reaction to the fight. Grief for Rand surprised me as melancholy thoughts filled my mind. The flames of the fire wiggled accusing red fingers at me.
"What do you think you're doing?" they asked. "Three men are dead because of you. How are you going to help anyone?"
"Pure conceit," the flames admonished.
"Go south.
Let Valak worry about the commander and what Brazel's up to, you silly girl." The fire pulsed, making shooing motions at me. I pulled my gaze away, blinking into the darkness. Was it my imagination, or was someone trying to influence me? Summoning the mental image of my protective brick wall cooled some of the doubts, but not all of them. Rand's disappearance wasn't noticed until the next morning. Thinking he had run away, Major Granton sent out a small search party, while the others continued deeper into Brazel's district. The rest of the journey was uneventful, except for the disturbing fact that the closer we drew to Brazel's manor house, the blanker the look grew on the commander's face. He had ceased to give orders or to take an interest in the events surrounding him. The intelligent, piercing glint that had made his gaze lethal faded with each step, leaving only a vacant, dull expression in its place. In contrast to the commander, I was beginning to feel rather warm. My hands left slick prints on my bow as we neared Brazel's. I scanned the woods for an ambush as dread hovered behind me like a pair of hands waiting to wrap around my neck. The ground felt soft and sucked at my boots so that each step required an extra effort. Big mistake. Big mistake coming to Brazel's, I thought, as my mind whirled on the edge of panic. To calm myself, I imagined my brick wall and focused my thoughts on survival. An hour away from Brazel's, the rich aroma of Criollo hung heavy in the air. As a precaution, I slipped into the forest off the main trail and stashed my backpack in the crook of a tree, hiding my bow nearby. Taking only my picks from the bag, I pulled my hair into a bun, using the thin metal tools to hold it in place. At the outer buildings of Brazel's manor, our pace slowed. A collective sigh of relief rippled through the soldiers. They had safely delivered the commander. Now they could rest in the barracks until it was time to return home. I experienced the opposite of the soldiers' ease despite my mental protection. I found it difficult to breathe as I followed the commander and his advisors to Brazel's office. I heard the liquid slamming in my heart and felt lightheaded. When we entered, Brazel rose from behind his desk, a large smile adorning his square face. Mogkin hovered behind Brazel's right shoulder. With my mental shield in place, I remained near the door, hoping to be inconspicuous. As Brazel recited a formal greeting, I surveyed his office. Lavish in its decoration, the room had a heavy, brooding feel. Black walnut wood framed hunting scenes, and crimson and purple velvet draped the windows. Brazel's oversized ebony desk seemed a barrier between his high-backed leather chair and the two overstuffed velvet seats facing it.
"Gentlemen, you must be tired from your trip," Brazel said to the commander's advisors as a tall woman entered the office. "My housekeeper will guide you to your rooms."
She motioned for them to follow her. As the advisors exited the room, I tried to slip out with them, but Mogkin grabbed my arm.
"Not yet," he said. "We have special plans for you."
Alarmed, I glanced at the commander, sitting in one of the chairs. The abundant purple fabric of the cushion exaggerated his pale face and slight build. No expression touched his features. He stared into the distance, a puppet waiting for his master to pull the strings.
"Now what?" Brazel asked Mogkin.
"We put on a show for a few days. Take him to see the factory as planned."
Mogkin gestured toward the commander.
"Keep his advisors happy. Once everyone's hooked, then we don't have to pretend."
"And her?"
Satisfaction bent the edges of Brazel's mouth.
I kept the picture of the brick wall in my mind.
Yelena, Mogkin said, you've learned a new trick. Red brick, how mundane, but...
I heard a faint scraping noise like stone grinding on stone.
Weak spots. Here and here.
Mogkin pointed a finger in the air.
And I do believe this brick is loose.
Mortar crumbled. Small holes appeared in my mental wall.
When I have a moment, I'll smash your defenses into dust, Mogkin promised.
Why waste your time? Brazel asked, drawing his sword. Dead. Now.
He advanced with murderous intent blazing in his eyes. I flinched back a step.
Stop, Mogkin ordered. We need her to keep Valak in line.
But we have the commander, Brazel whined like a child.
Too obvious. There are 7 other generals to consider. If we kill the commander while he's here, they would be suspicious. You'd never become his successor. Valak knows this, so any threat to the commander won't work.
Mogkin turned his calculating eyes on me.
But who cares about a food taster? No one except Valak. And if she dies here, the generals will agree that it was justified.
Mogkin leaned over the commander, whispering in his ear. The commander opened his briefcase, withdrew a flask, and handed it to Mogkin.
My antidote. Starting now, you'll come to me for your medicine, Mogkin said, smiling.
Before I could react, someone knocked on the door. 2 soldiers entered the office without waiting for permission.
Your escorts are here, Yelena. They'll take good care of you.
Mogkin turned to the guards.
She doesn't need a tour. Our infamous Yelena has come home.
Chapter 29. I scanned the 2 muscular guards. Swords, short knives, and manacles hung from their belts. They were well armed and wore grim expressions of recognition. I was outmatched. I touched the familiar lump of the switchblade strapped to my thigh, but decided to wait until the odds were more in my favor. The guards gestured for me to accompany them. I shot a final beseeching look at the commander, but nothing so far had roused him from his oblivious stupor. I felt a small surge of hope when the guards led me to a tiny, barren room in the guest wing instead of the underground cells in which Brazel housed his prisoners. Having spent a week in those dank, rat-infested chambers after I killed Rayad, I loathed the thought of ever going back. After the door was locked behind me, I took comfort from removing the picks from my hair. The lock was a basic pin-and-tumbler type, which would be easy to open. Before springing it, I slipped a small pick with a mirror on the end under the door. With the mirror, I spied a pair of boots standing on either side. Those overachieving guards had stationed themselves outside my room. I went to the window. The guest wing was on the 2nd floor. My view included the main courtyard. I could jump to the ground if I was desperate, but for now, I would wait. The next day, I was permitted out of my room only to taste the commander's meals. After breakfast, Mogkin waved a small vial of antidote in front of my face.
If you want this, you must answer a question, he said.
I steadied my nerves. With a calm voice, I replied, You're bluffing. If you wanted me dead, I wouldn't be standing here now.
I assure you, it's only a temporary condition.
Anger burned in his eyes.
I'm merely offering you a choice. Death by butterfly's dust is a long, ugly, and excruciating experience, while, say, slitting your throat is quick, a moment of pain.
What's the question?
Where's Valak?
I don't know, I said truthfully. I hadn't seen Valak since the fight in the woods. Mogkin considered my answer. Taking advantage of his distracted state, I plucked the vial from his hand and drained it in a single gulp.
Mogkin's face reddened with fury. He seized my shoulders, then shoved me toward the guards. Take her back to her room, he ordered.
Once there, I wondered what mischief Valak was creating. I doubted he was sitting idle. Mogkin's questions on Valak's whereabouts confirmed my suspicions. Restless, I paced the small chamber, longing for a workout with Ari and Jenko. During my brief visits with the commander over the next few days, I began to recognize that my presence was part of Mogkin's show. In order to keep the commander's advisors from becoming suspicious, Brazel pretended the commander was still giving orders. At one point, Brazel leaned close to the commander as if they were having a private conversation, then proclaimed that, per Commander Ambrose's request, a factory tour would be scheduled for the next day. I was allowed to join the group going to the plant. This surprised me almost as much as the fact that none of the commander's advisors made a protest or comment about Brazel manufacturing Criollo instead of the livestock feed he had reported on his permit. They munched on bars of Criollo, content to nod and agree with Brazel that the factory was a marvelous invention. As we walked through the building, sweltering heat pulsed from the gigantic roasters that were continuously fed with Sishin beans. Workers, streaked with sweat and black dust, shoveled coal into the massive fires under the ovens. Once roasted, the beans were conveyed to a large area where other workers cracked their shells with mallets, extracting a dark brown nib. Steel rollers crushed the nibs into a paste. The paste was spooned into a 5-foot-wide metal container to which sugar, milk, and butter were added. Using steel pitchforks, workers stirred these ingredients until the mixture became a smooth, thick liquid, which was then poured into square and rectangular-shaped molds. A veritable shop of delightful smells and flavors, the place was, however, a joyless environment. The Dewar employees, uniforms soiled with Criollo and sweat, grunted and strained under the physical exertion. During the tour, I searched the various work areas for poisonous or addictive ingredients that might be slipped into the mix, but found none. When the group returned to Brazel's manor house, I watched the animated expressions on the advisors' faces leak away, leaving behind the same blank look that had taken over the commander's face, which meant that there must be a link between eating Criollo and succumbing to Mogkin's magic. Mogkin's show would end as soon as he had gained control of the advisors' minds, and when that happened, my accommodations would change for the worse. That night, under cover of darkness, I dropped my cloak out the window of my room and banged on the door, calling to the guards. When the door opened, I declared, "I need a bath." Without waiting for a response, I strode with purpose down the hallway. The guards followed. At the baths, one guard stopped me in the hallway while his companion looked around inside. Only when he was sure I would be alone did he nod and step back. As I went through the entrance, I said in an authoritative voice, "I don't need an audience. Wait here. I won't be long." To my delight, they remained outside. I scurried to the far wall where, hidden from view, there was another entrance. The guards might work in the manor house, but I'd grown up here. With a child's curiosity and free time, I had been able to explore almost every corner of the house. Only Brazel's private suite, office, and Rayad's wing had been off limits. Unfortunately, once I turned 16, Rayad's wing became my daily nightmare. Pushing away the thought, I concentrated on the present. I pulled the handle of the door and encountered my first unwanted surprise. It was locked. No problem, I thought, reaching for my picks. The mechanism popped with ease, the door swung open, and I discovered a second nasty shock. One of the guards waited in the hallway. He smirked. I rushed him. Using my momentum, I shoved him off balance and punched him in the groin. A dirty Valak move, but I didn't care as I raced down the corridor, leaving the guard far behind. Slipping out the south entrance, I retrieved my cloak, and then headed west to find my pack and bow. Bright moonlight illuminated my path, and I could see where I was going, however my true path was less evident. I knew I couldn't help the commander from a locked room, but I was unsure what I could do from the outside. I needed to talk to Valak. Deciding it would be too risky to go to the barracks, I took to the treetops. Only Valak knew this trick. Once he learned of my escape, he would track me. When I reached the open area reserved for the annual fire festival's visit to MD5, I stopped for the night. Shivering in my cloak, I huddled against a tree trunk, blowing clouds of steam from my mouth. Once, I heard the bang of dogs and distant shouts, but no one came close to my makeshift bed in the tree. Sleep eluded me. I was too cold and nervous. Instead, I envisioned the bright fabric of the festival tents in the clearing, hoping to warm myself by remembering the hot energy of the festival nights. I imagined the big tops in their proper places, dancers, singers, and acrobats lined up in the middle of the clearing. Food stands huddled in and around the big tents, scenting the air with mouth-watering treats. I went to the festival every hot season when I had lived under Brazil's roof. It had been the highlight of my existence. Although my memories of those last 2 years, when I had been Rayad's laboratory rat, were dreadful. Unable to resist, I climbed down from the tree and walked through my imaginary festival. I stopped where the acrobatics tent had stood, wondering if I could still perform the tumbling routine that had won me first place and the fire amulet. Without thought, I tossed off my cloak and started a warm-up. In the back of my mind, I knew I should be hiding, that it was stupid to be this exposed to discovery, but the desire to relive my one moment of true joy was too strong to deny. Soon all thoughts of Brazil, Rayad, and Mogkin were banished as I spun and soared through the air. My mind settled into the mental zone of pure concentration I used when I fought. I relished the release, brief as it might be, from my days of tension and threat. As I performed my routine, I discovered that I could push my heightened awareness beyond my body to encompass the trees, even sense the animals in the forest. An owl, perched high on a branch, tracked the movements of a field mouse. A family of possums slipped without sound through the underbrush. A woman, crouched behind a stone, watched me. Stealing into Iris's mind was as easy as slipping on a pair of gloves. Her thoughts flowed into my mind like silk. I reminded her of her younger sister, Lily, and she longed to be back home with her family, not sneaking around in cold, horrid Ixia. The situation in the north was getting dangerous. She would be safer in Citia. But for how long, she wondered. As a master-level magician, she couldn't allow the abuse of power that she had felt emanating from this area to continue. Kengum, who called himself Mogkin, was producing theobroma at alarming quantities. He had also rigged a way to intensify his power. Iris's thought returned to me, and I felt a tug on our mental connection. Elena, what are you doing in my mind? I'm not sure how I got here.
Haven't you figured it out by now? You're focusing your magic when you fight. That's why you instinctively anticipate your opponent's moves. I felt you at the castle when you were fighting your friends. Now that you have learned to harness your power, you have taken the next logical step by expanding it beyond the immediate area.
My surprise broke our link. I stopped, panting in the cold night air as Iris emerged from the woods. Does that mean I'm not going to flame out? I asked.
You've stabilized, but you won't get any stronger unless you receive the proper training. You don't want to waste your potential. Come south now. Your pursuers are miles away.
The commander
is ensorcelled. Nothing you can do. His mind is probably gone. Mogkin has been feeding him theobroma. I've smelled it since I arrived.
Theobroma? Do you mean Criollo? The brown-colored sweet that Brazil's manufacturing?
That sounds right. It opens a mind to magical influence. It relaxes the mental defenses, allowing easy access to someone's mind. We use it as a training tool in controlled situations where a fledgling magician is close to the subject. The commander has a strong personality, very resistant to magical suggestion. Theobroma breaks down that barrier, which helps when a student is learning, but using it on the commander to gain control of his mind is the same as rape.
Iris pulled her cloak tight around her shoulders.
Even with Theobroma, a magician shouldn't be able to reach the commander's mind from this distance, but Mogkin has. He has found a way to boost his power.
Iris rubbed her arms with her hands, trying to warm up.
I'm guessing Mogkin's visit to the castle was to lock himself into the commander's mind so he could lead him out here.
What can we do to break the lock? I asked.
Kill Mogken. But it'll be difficult. He's very powerful.
Isn't there another way? I recalled my conversation in the woods with Valak about murder as a solution.
My formula, he had said,
and it still annoyed me. He'd probably never been in the lose-lose situation I was always finding myself in.
Block Mogken's power supply. That might work. He'll still have his magic, but it won't be enhanced.
What would his extra power look like? How do we find it?
My guess would be that he's either recruited a number of magicians to pool their power, or he's devised a way to concentrate the power source without warping it. She paused, considering. Diamonds.
Diamonds? A cold knot of anxiety churned in my stomach. There was so much I didn't know about magic.
Yes, very expensive. But they will gather and store power like a hot coal holds heat. He might be using diamonds to enhance his magic. He would need a man-sized circle of diamonds, and that's not easily hidden. If we could find this circle, I might be able to use it to block his power, or at least redirect it long enough for you to awaken the commander.